is a Capricorn FM podcast.
This grade 12 lesson is proudly brought to you by the Department of Education. Working together, we can do more providing quality education.
I'm back again, Mr. JSR, attached to Texila Secondary School in Petersburg Circuit, and then that is Capricorn South District. So last time, when we were busy with the last lesson, I said we are going to continue with the reproduction because we're busy with the old part of the two aspects. In fact, number one, it was about the male reproductive system. Number two, the female reproductive systems. Then we also discussed something about the structural suitability of the stem cells and also the changes that take place to in puberty stage, more especially from male side and female side. Maybe just to refresh, I told you that normally when you check yourself, the fact that you are in grade 12 and you compare yourself with a learner or a child who is 1 year or 2 years old, you can see that you are so different from each other. With regard to females, they've developed breasts, they also develop hips, and then the pubic hairs, menstruation starts to take place. I told you that that is caused by the hormone oestrogen, which is responsible for the development of secondary sexual characteristics. But with regard to males, I said the testis releases testosterone, which is a hormone, and then that hormone is responsible for the development of secondary sexual characteristics in males. Like, for argument's sake, we can talk about shoulder and chest getting broader, and then muscles also develop, and then enlargement of the voice box, and also the deepening of voice. Penis and testis increase in size, and then start of production of sperm cells, and also the development of pubic hairs and also facial hairs. So that's why I said the simplest subject here on earth is life sciences, the grade 12 life science subject, because it deals with you as a human being. Now, maybe to recap from what we discussed last time, we also talked about gametogenesis. Just to refresh your memory, I said gametogenesis is a compound word made up of gameto and genesis. And then I told you that from the Bible, the first book in the Bible is Genesis, which deals with the foundation. So in other words, they have added prefix gamete, and then Genesis means that that is the formation of gametes. Very simple. Now, with this gametogenesis, remember we've got two gametes. We've got the male gametes, which are the sperm cells. We also have the female gametes, which are the egg cells. Now, like to recap from what we discussed last time, just to take you on board. I said, with regard to biological concepts, examiner is going to ask you a lot of questions based on this. He may end up saying, more especially through the during the first question, which deals with the biological concept, he may end up saying the process whereby gametes are formed. Then you simply say gametogenesis. Very simple. But now, remember, when you talk about gametogenesis, like I said, it's a compound word made up of gameto and genesis. Now, these gametes are also divided into two, like I've already indicated. The sperm cells and also the egg cells from male and also female. Now, sometimes the examiner is going to say the formation of sperm cells. And then, obviously, you are going to say that is spermatogenesis, spermato, the prefix, and then genesis. That is the other name indicating formation. But with regard to oogenesis, and the first word, that is the prefix, and also genesis meaning formation. Now, here is about the formation of the egg cells. Very simple. But now, as much as I keep on telling you that there are different questions, but same answers, examiner may end up saying, remember, when you talk about formation of egg cells, you are going to say oogenesis. Formation of stem cells, you say spermatogenesis. Formation of gametes, you say gametogenesis. But examiner may end up saying the formation of stem cells and egg cells. Formation of egg cells and stem cells. Many learners get confused here. They say spermatogenesis. And then immediately say spermatogenesis, meaning that we are no longer talking about oogenesis. And immediately choose oogenesis, meaning that you care less about spermatogenesis. So remember, formation of egg cells and sperm cells, collectively those are gametes, then the process is called gametogenesis. Very simple. Now, if examiner is going to request you to define, you are going to define it like that. But if examiner says explain spermatogenesis or explain oogenesis, with regard to oogenesis, you are going to do the following. Number one, you must tell us the hormone that influences the whole process, because that's going to be regarded as the key concept, or sometimes they regard it as the compulsory mark. You must tell us that it takes place under the influence of FSH, that is the follicle stimulating hormone. Don't forget that one. And then, although I'm still going to discuss this, I want to bring this point forth so that at least you understand what's happening. Then with regard to spermatogenesis, number one, the compulsory mark there is going to be, it takes place under the influence of testosterone. Very vital, very, very vital, because sometimes you may end up explaining a lot of information and then you realize that maybe it is about 4 marks, and then you have given us 7 points. And then let me say it's about 5 marks or 4 marks. You have given 7 points, which are correct, but you end up getting 3. Why 3? Because you realize that you forgot to write, if it is spermatogenesis, you shall have forgotten to write that spermatogenesis takes place under the influence of testosterone. This is very vital because, as I indicated, you need to tell us the hormones that influence spermatogenesis and also the hormone that influence oogenesis. I'm sure we're together on that note. Now, to continue with regard to oogenesis, you are going to say it takes place under the influence of FSH, and then from there you must also tell us about the diploid cell in the ovary undergo mitosis, then you get a mark for mitosis, to form numerous follicles. Many learners confuse the follicle and ovary and egg. I was presenting in the morning at Chagwa, my former school, Chagwa Secondary School. I was highlighting this point. Maybe it is very vital for us to also highlight this. Let me be slow here. I want you to get me straight. Let me say we're talking about Texila Secondary School as a institution. Then remember, Texila Secondary School, we also have classrooms. And then inside the classrooms, we find students. And then let me say we are dealing with grade 12 learners. Then immediately after you shall have written the final exam, obviously you are going to go to universities. Then your classes are going to be empty, meaning that we are going to wait for learners that are coming from grade 11. Now those classes, because they are empty now, if we're talking about, we relate this scenario with what I'm going to present here, then those classes they are like corpus luteum. I want you to get this straight. So if we're talking about Texila Secondary School, it's like when you talk about the ovary, you can write it down so that at least you understand what's happening. Write the ovary on the right-hand side. On the left-hand side, just write Texila or your school. You can write the name of your school. Now, I said if it is Texila has got classrooms, you write classrooms. If you have written the name of your school, it's fine. Then number two, but you are going to write classrooms. Then from there, the third point, you are going to write, remember, in the classroom we find students. So you also write students. Now from there, maybe you can indicate an arrow where students are going to move out of that particular classroom. Then the remaining classroom without students, then you just leave it like that. But let us relate it with the information that I'm going to give you on the right-hand side. Now, the name of your school, on the right-hand side, just write equal sign, and you write ovary. Then the classrooms, you write follicle. And then inside the classroom, remember we said we find students, then you write excels. Now, you indicate that excel moving away from the follicle now. And then that empty follicle now is the one that is called the corpus luteum. Very, very vital for you to understand this, so that when we explain the role played by different hormones as far as menstruation cycle is concerned, at least you will be having the knowledge. Now, you are going to say it takes place under the influence of FSH, and we said the diploid cell in the ovary undergo mitosis to form numerous follicles. Then one cell inside the follicle enlarges and undergo meiosis to form a mature ovum. Just that. last time, maybe learners who failed to listen to the last lesson, I said in most instances there are a lot of books, although I'm not going to mention the names of those books. You realize that they give a lot of information, which is very relevant, which is very correct. But now, during final examination, you realize that a learner, instead of explaining Genesis according to the exam guideline, he explains it according to different books that he or she might have studied. Now, the challenge here is that the information that we are going to give, and we realize that there are a lot of information, which is very good, which is very correct, but you end up getting one. Why? Because you should have not studied according to the exam guideline. I told you several times to say, normally because final exam paper are national papers, the examiners, they realize that many schools use different types of books. Just Limpopo province only, you may realize that we are using almost more than 9 different types of books. What about Eastern Cape and other provinces? So otherwise, the memorandum was going to be very difficult for us to use when we'll be marking. I talked about the growth hormone last time. To say the growth hormone, they may end up saying this is GH. And the other name of growth hormone is somatotropic hormone. Then maybe examiner write slash and write somatotropic hormone. In some books, they talk of somatotropin. Then you write slash, you write somatotropin. And then the abbreviation of somatotropic hormone is STH, not TSH. TSH is the thyroid stimulating hormone. Then STH, somatotropic hormone. Can you see that this is going to be very difficult? Now, if you write somatotropin or somatotropic hormone, you get zero. Not that that somatotropin or somatotropic hormone is not correct. It's correct, but examiners, that's why they use exam guideline. The main reason why we use this exam guideline, this is the guideline that is used by examiner. They are trying to trim all this lot of terminology so that at least when we mark, the memorandum becomes simple. It's like when you talk about the hammer, anvil, and syrup, as far as the ears concerned. Some books, they talk of the malleus, incus, and state. So if you write malleus instead of hammer, you write incus instead of state, instead of anvil, you write states instead of stirrup, you are going to get zero. Not to say you wrote the wrong things. No, because you do not write according to the exam guideline. Very simple, because if you check the exam guideline, it's going to guide you accordingly. So make sure that at least you also use the terminologies that are used by examiners. I'm sure we are on the same page with regard to that statement. Now, but with regard to spermatogenesis now, you are going to say it takes place under the influence of testosterone. Then you get a mark for that. From there, you are going to say the germinal epithelial cells underlying the seminiferous tubules in the testes undergo meiosis to form 4 haploid spermatids. Let me guide you about this. Remember, the testes, inside the testes, we have got the tubules that are regarded as the seminiferous tubule. But outside the testes, we have got the highly coiled tubule, which is called the epididymis, which was said during child examination. Although many learners were confused because they said it is the scrotum, whereas it is not the scrotum. That is the epididymis. Remember, we said it stores sperm cells temporarily. But with regard to this information that I've just provided, you need to know that inside the testes, we find what we call the seminiferous tubules. Now, to repeat what I said, it takes place under the influence of testosterone, which is the key concept or the compulsory mark. Then we say the germinal epithelial cells underlining seminiferous tubules. In the testes, you get a mark for seminiferous tubule and also the testes. Very easy. Then undergoes meiosis to form 4 haploid spermatids, another mark. Now, ultimately, we are going to talk about this spermatids developing into a mature sperm cells. And then you get another mark. From there, you also tell us where do they mature. Remember, we said they mature in the epididymis. Then you also get a mark for that. Very simple and straightforward. Now, with fertilization, remember I said I'm taking you on board to link the previous knowledge with this new knowledge. I said fertilization and development of zygote until implantation. Then many learners, because now I'm guiding on how many learners commit a lot of mistakes and also how to alleviate those kinds of mistakes. Many learners, when you say fertilization, they start by copulation or sexual intercourse, where they talk of says the penis is inserted into the female, and then from there the sperm cells are going to be released, and then from there they swim using the tail, which is true, and then the mitochondria are going to provide energy, which is also true, and then from there they say the sperm cell fertilizes the egg, and then immediately stop there. That is exactly where you are supposed to start. That's the problem, because we're talking about fertilization. So when you start to explain almost everything, you are talking about copulation, or which is sexual intercourse, which examiner shall have not asked you this type of question, because he's saying fertilization. Immediately they talk about fertilization, number one, you must tell us exactly where this process takes place. Like, it takes place in the fallopian tube. Then from there you tell us that the one sperm cell makes contact with the membrane of the egg. And then, remember, the sperm cell has got the acrosome, which is the front part of the head of the sperm cell. Then the acrosome releases enzymes, and those enzymes digest the membrane of the egg, or dissolve the membrane of the egg. So other mistakes that are committed by learners, they say the acrosome digests the membrane of the egg, which is not correct. The acrosome releases the enzymes. Those enzymes are the ones that digest the membrane of the egg, or dissolve the membrane of the egg. Then the nucleus of the sperm enters the ovum. Then the membrane of the ovum becomes impenetrable, so that to other sperm cells, so that not a lot of sperm cells should get into the egg cell. And then the haploid nucleus of the sperm fuses with the haploid nucleus of the ovum. And then ultimately, you know that when the sperm cell fertilizes the egg, they form the zygote, and then that zygote is diploid. Di meaning two, ploid meaning set, meaning that it consists of two sets. Then we'll be going for a break right now, and then when we come back, I'll be linking with the development of zygote and tissue implantation. From there, we'll continue with the functions of umbilical cord and other subtopics. Welcome back, my lovely learners, and then we are continuing with the development of zygote until implantation. From there, we'll be dealing with the functions of umbilical cord, the functions of placenta, functions of amniotic fluid, the menstrual cycle, and then remember it's made up of ovarian cycle and uterine cycle. Then we'll be discussing those because they normally give learners a lot of challenges. Now, let me start with the development of zygote until implantation. Although it's a recap from what we discussed last time, there are educators that are very positive to make sure that they are always listening. One of the educators sent me the message to say, Mr. Majia, could you please repeat the information that you talk about the development of zygote until implantation, because you talked about that discussion before. Let me repeat this. Just write development of zygote until implantation. In brackets, write Z and equal sign. Then you write Mbefui, MBEFUI. Then I said Z stands for zygote, and then M for Muruda, and then B for blastocyst or blastula, and then E for embryo. And then F, in fact, they said we should use two Fs. Then the other F is for uterus. Another F is fallopian tube. We also have the U for uterus. And then we also have I for implantation. Let me repeat. I said Z for zygote. And then M for Muruna. And then B for blastocyst. Some books, they talk of the blastula. And then we also have what we call the F, which is the two Fs in fact. The other one is the for the fetus, but the other one is the fallopian tube, and then U for the uterus, and then I for implantation. But now on that note, although I've given you a lot of mnemonic devices here, but just listen attentively so that you know exactly what you are going to use here. Then the zygote divides by mitosis, and then immediately you say mitosis, then you get a mark to form a ball of cells, and then this ball of cells, in some books, more especially when I checked other memorandum, they also award you a mark for mentioning the board of cells, called Murula, then you also get a mark for Murula. Already I've got 3 marks. I said the zygote divides by mitosis to form a board of cells called Murula. And then the second point, Murula develops into a hollow ball of cells. Hollow ball of cells called the blastula or the blastocyst. And then the blastocyst develop into the embryo. Now that fetus that we talked about, you may not use it. Then that fallopian tube, I'm going to tell you what's going to happen about the fallopian tube. Now, in short, maybe to, before I continue, meaning that the whole process where the zygote develops into Murula, Murula into the blastocyst, then that process will be taking place inside the fallopian tube. That F is, the other F is for fallopian tube, moving towards the uterus. That U is for uterus. But with regard to the uterus, you don't just say the embryo or the blastocyst or blastula is going to implant itself on the uterus. You must mention the endometrium of the uterus. It's very vital. Although I said the uterus, but you must know that inside the uterus, there's the inner lining membrane, which is called the endometrium. Remember, endometrium is also a compound weight made up of endo and metrium. Endo meaning inside, and then metrium meaning the membrane. Because in the past, we were supposed to know three, because the uterus or the uterine wall is made up of three. The outer membrane, which is called the perimetrium, peri meaning outside, metrium meaning the membrane. The middle one, which is called the myometrium, myo meaning middle, metrium meaning the membrane. The inner one called the endometrium, endo meaning inside. Now, but now they reduce a lot of information just to cater for you so that you don't become overloaded with a lot of information. Now, as long as you know the endometrium, then you're fine. And then don't forget that the endometrium is the inner lining of the uterus. Now, some books, they say the embryo embeds or implants itself into the uterus or the uterus lining or the endometrium of the uterus using the chorionic villi. And then if you write chorionic villi, you also get a mark for that. Now, in some books, they talk of blastocyst attaching itself on the endometrium. It's also fine. Now, but the most important thing that I want to bring forth now is today's work based on the functions of umbilical cord, then the placenta, and also the functions of amniotic fluid and menstrual cycle. Now, with regard to umbilical cord, I want you to write the following first. Write number one, and then you write mother. You write two, just below, skip two lines, and then below the mother you write two, then from there you write placenta. Then you skip two lines, then you write three, you write the fetus. So in other words, you're going to have one, mother, two, placenta, three, the fetus. Now, between the placenta and the fetus, draw two parallel lines moving downwards, meaning that they're joining placenta and the fetus. Now, those two parallel lines just indicate this is the umbilical cord. Just write umbilical cord on the right-hand side. Label it the umbilical cord. Now, inside those two parallel lines, because now we know that is the umbilical cord, draw another line. Let us be on the same page, because I want you to grab this. Draw a line from the fetus moving towards the placenta, and then draw an arrow to indicate that it's moving from the fetus to the placenta. And then that line indicated A, because last time I said the placenta is like a university. Placenta is like university. During our time, if you get 80 to 100%, you get A symbol. But now they talk about level 7. Then just write A so that you don't forget. I said placenta is like university. Then you write A, meaning that A stands for artery. Then because it's the artery of the umbilical cord, then you talk about the umbilical artery. You label it like that. Learners who got 0 to 18, in fact, it was 0 to 19, it was H symbol. H, then from 20 to 29, it was G. From 30 to 39, it was F, and so on and so on. Now, let us say we also have the symbol V, which is the last symbol. Now, that V, obviously, it is moving away from the university. Let me say, there are learners who passed very well. Other learners do not pass well when they go to university. Normally, because of this COVID, they normally say, no, the security personnel, they make sure that they check. In the past, in fact, they used to check the statements. And then when they check the statements, they realize that you do not obtain bachelor. Then from there, during our time, it was called exemption. You were going to be returned by the security personnel. Now, let me say, you obtained V, which is the last symbol, then meaning that those who are moving from the placenta, which is the university, going back now, then you write V. Then that V write vein, and then because that is the vein of the umbilical cord, then you write the umbilical vein. You see, very easy. As long as you know that this arrow moves from the fetus to the placenta, which is called the artery or the umbilical artery, and then the vein is moving from the placenta to the fetus. Remember the vein we're talking about, the umbilical vein, then you're fine. Why? Because when you are supposed to give the function of the umbilical cord, you are going to get everything right, almost 5 marks. Number one, let us start with the function with regard to attachment, basing our argument on attachment. The fact that the umbilical cord is found between the fetus and the placenta. Now, it goes without any say to say it attaches the fetus to the placenta. Then that's the first function. Number two, in fact, the two functions that you can group them together. You check the artery. Remember, the artery is moving from the fetus to the placenta. Number one, meaning that this artery is taking away the waste products and also carbon dioxide. Very easy. But the vein, because it's moving from the placenta to the fetus, meaning that it carries valuable substances. So in other words, it carries oxygen and it also carries nutrients. Now, how are you going to coin them in the form of functions? You are going to say the umbilical artery, remember, is coming from the fetus to the placenta, carries deoxygenated blood. Remember, deoxygenated blood, D is the prefix. D meaning minus. Or in other words, deoxygenated blood, that is the blood without oxygen. Then obviously blood with carbon dioxide. Then you get a mark for that. And the other function I'm going to say, it carries nitrogenous waste from the fetus to the placenta. You get the third mark. Very easy. Now, I said the vein, because it's moving from the placenta to the fetus, it carries valuable substances. Now, the first one, let us deal with the gas. Obviously, the child should receive oxygen. Now, a blood that carries oxygen are called oxygenated blood. So, in other words, you are going to say the umbilical vein carries deoxygenated blood from the placenta to the fetus. Very simple. Then the other function again of the umbilical vein, because it's moving from the placenta to the fetus, you simply say it carries dissolved food substances from the placenta to the fetus. Then you get 5 marks. Now, with regard to function of placenta, the function of placenta is similar to the functions of umbilical cord. The only difference is that you are going to insert the word diffusion. So now, let me check the following. Remember, the placenta is found between the mother and the fetus now. Now, the fact that it is found between the mother and the fetus, with regard to attachment, number one, you are going to say it attaches the fetus to the mother. Then you get 1 mark. It attaches the fetus to the mother. Number two, it secretes the hormone which is called progesterone. And then remember, this hormone maintains pregnancy, but it normally secretes this after 12 months. But the first 3 months, when somebody is pregnant, the corpus luteum is the one that is going to release the hormone progesterone, and then that hormone is the one that is going to maintain pregnancy. But after 3 months, it's like when a teacher is occupying a temporary post. Maybe somebody has gone to accouchment and leave. Then you realize that maybe we employ a teacher who is going to take charge of the classes maybe for only 3 months. Now we call that teacher a temporary teacher for that moment. Now it's like corpus luteum is the one that is holding a temporary post for 3 months. Then after 3 months, then placenta takes over now for almost 9 months, meaning that from the fourth month to the ninth month, then that is the second function of placenta, producing the progesterone. But now, with regard to the word diffusion now, you are going to say it allows for diffusion of gases. Let us start with carbon dioxide. Remember, carbon dioxide should diffuse from the fetus to the mother, not from the mother to the fetus. So you are going to say it allows for diffusion of carbon dioxide from the fetus to the mother. Then let us deal with gases, and we know that we're done. You also say it allows for diffusion of oxygen from the mother to the fetus. Does that? You don't have to cram, because you know that the child should receive oxygen and the child should receive nutrients. Very easy. Now, the other one with regard to nutrients and waste products, you are going to say it allows for diffusion of nutrients or dissolved nutrients from the fetus and from the mother to the fetus. But it allows for diffusion of nitrogenous waste from the fetus to the mother. Then you get almost 6 marks. Then with regard to the function of the amniotic fluid, you don't have to cram. Isn't that when you say amniotic fluid, that is a fluid. Now, because it's a fluid, it's a liquid. Obviously, number one, it prevents the fetus against desiccation. Desiccation is drying out. It prevents the fetus against drying out or dehydration. In some books, they talk of dehydration. Remember, D meaning, it's the prefix D meaning minus. Hydration from the word hydrate, and then dealing with water. So in other words, it prevents the fetus or the embryo against dehydration or drying out. Some books, they talk of desiccation. You just choose the terminology that you think is going to be easier for you. Number two, it acts as shock absorber. So in other words, it prevents the fetus against mechanical injury. Many learners make a mistake here. They end up saying it acts as a shock absorber. Then they say the second function, it prevents fetus against mechanical injury. That is one and the same function. This is the explanation of the statement that I've just outlined to say, when we say it acts as shock absorber, we simply mean that it prevents the fetus against mechanical injury. But again, it allows for free fetal movement. And then this free fetal movement, it enhances the growth and development of the fetus. So in other words, you can simplify it like this to say it allows for free fetal movement. Then you get a mark. In some instances, you may end up adding to say for growth and development. Now, the other thing, remember we have the skin that regulates temperature. I explained it thoroughly when I was busy with homeostasis. But the child regulates temperature like this. It has this amniotic fluid, which keeps the fetus within a small temperature range. It keeps the fetus within a small temperature range. And then remember the last one I said, it prevents the embryo against dehydration. It prevents the embryo against dehydration. Now, we are left with menstrual cycle. And remember, menstrual cycle is made up of ovarian and uterine cycle. So I'm going to explain, because this part is the one that gives a lot of learners challenges. But on the note, I'm going to give you this. So now just write pituitary gland, and then on the right-hand side, draw an arrow and write LH, and then draw an arrow moving to the left-hand side, write FSH, and then below LH, remember LH is only two letters. You're going to write two letters that are similar or the same. You write PP, but the rule there is supposed to be three letters. Now, the fact that you have written PP, just before the first P, you write C. In other words, you are going to have CPP. Then for FSH, you are going to have, these are three letters you write. Below FSH, you write O is equals to O is equals to O. Then just have that formula for now. Thanks so much, my lovely sister. Now, I was talking about menstrual cycle, but I said before we explain a lot of things based on menstrual cycle, you need to write pituitary gland, then you draw the arrow moving towards the right hand side, you write FH, you draw another arrow moving to the left hand side, you write FSH. Below FSH, remember FSH are three letters, you are going to write three letters that are the same. O is equal to O is equal to O. then oath for ovary, another oath for ovulation, another oath for estrogen. Now, just below LH, you write CPP, then that C stands for corpus luteum, you write it down, corpus luteum, then another P stands for progesterone, progesterone, and then another P stands for pregnancy. Now, from there, I want you to draw this line, draw a line from progesterone, and let it cut across moving to the FSH. Just draw a line moving upward towards the direction of FSH, and then you write inhibits. Just write inhibits, and then draw another line moving from the LH, cutting across, moving to the word ovulation. And when you check this, the diagram that you have drawn, the other arrow is moving from LH to ovulation, the other one from FSH to progesterone. It's like you have written the multiplication sign. Now, from here, you are going to get a lot of questions based on this information. Let me show you how questions are asked. Don't try the examination. There were a lot of questions based on this scenario. Number one, somewhere they talk about when we check from your exam guideline, they normally say, explain the relationship between progesterone and FSH. Remember I said, you draw a line moving from progesterone, moving to FSH, then you write inhibits. So, questions based on this are always asked, although they are going to coin them in different ways. The first way of asking this type of question, examiner may end up saying, what is the relationship between progesterone and FSH? The answer is always the same. You simply say, high level of progesterone inhibits the production of FSH. That's why normally, when somebody is pregnant, the very same person does not menstruate for 9 months. That is the main reason. Because the follicle stimulating hormone is prevented. Why? Because it's prevented by the progesterone. Why progesterone is preventing this? Because progesterone maintains pregnancy. And this progesterone is like a human being, if maybe I can personify this. He's so jealous to understand that he makes it a point that the fact that he's the boss now and he's the one who maintains pregnancy, and he knows that this person is going to menstruate for these 9 months if this FSH is not prevented. So the first thing that he does, he makes sure that FSH is inhibited, is prevented. For 9 months now, FSH is no longer going to be released. Why? Because immediately it becomes released, it acts on the ovary. Remember, FSH is the follicle stimulating hormone, the hormone that stimulates the follicle. So immediately stimulate the follicle, or it deals with the development of the follicle, meaning that that follicle, ultimately, the egg is going to be released from the follicle, and then that is ovulation. And then from ovulation, because when you talk about menstruation, like I'm still going to discuss here, it's a 28-day cycle, remember? 14 days plus 14 days is cost 28. 14 days is when the follicle is developing, and then on the 14th day, then it becomes released from the follicle. Then the container now is called the corpus luteum. But that process where the egg is released from the follicle, then that is called ovulation. Now, and immediately the egg is released into the fallopian tube now. At any given time, if sexual intercourse takes place, meaning that the sperm cells are going to fertilize that particular egg. But if 14 days expires and you realize that that egg is not fertilized, remember the endometrium shall have been thickened by the estrogen. I'm still going to guide you about the role played by estrogen and also progesterone. Now, when you say I have period pains, it's when that membrane is now tearing off because it shall have been thickened. Why? It's to prepare for the attachment of the fertilized egg. Now, if the egg has not been fertilized and then 14 days expires, then that membrane tears off. Now you start to have what we call the period pains. And then from there, after period pains, then you menstruate now. And there is a misconception. Sometimes men do not say, maybe that egg that's moving out, that's why blood is also flowing out. Maybe it is that egg. The egg that we're talking about is very, very small. You need to know that the only thing that is moving out in the form of blood, that is the tearing of that membrane, just that. Now, although I'm still going to discuss it thoroughly, but I want you to check the following. If examiner says, what is the relationship between progesterone and FSH? You simply say, high level of progesterone inhibits the production of FSH. And don't just say progesterone inhibits production of FSH. You are going to get zero. You must tell us to say high level of progesterone inhibits the production of FSH. The other question based on what I've just presented, examiner may end up saying, if somebody is pregnant, why do you think for 9 months the same person does not menstruate? Maybe 4 months. Number one, you must tell us that FSH is not going to be released. It's inhibited, you get a mark. And then meaning that the follicle is not going to be stimulated, you get another mark. And then ovulation is not going to take place, another mark. And then as long as ovulation shall not, have not taken place, obviously, you are not going to see the thickening of the endometrium where the tearing off of the endometrium is going to take place. So meaning that no thickening of endometrium, no menstruation, as simple as that. But sometimes examiner may end up saying, remember I said, draw another line moving from the LH to ovulation. One of the learners at Hagwa was also asking me this to say, sir, you talked about luteinizing hormone forming the progesterone. Forming the corpus luteum. What about stimulation of ovulation? I said, no, I'm still going to explain it thoroughly over the radio in the afternoon. I was just, because I was teaching different topics, I was just giving this as an example. I said, no, it is true that LH stimulates ovulation. Don't forget this one. LH stimulates ovulation. In other words, the functions of LH are stimulating ovulation, number one. Number two, forming the corpus luteum by converting the ruptured follicle. Now, remember on the left-hand side we've got ovary, ovulation and oestrogen. On the right-hand side we've got corpus luteum, progesterone and pregnancy. Now, you draw another arrow moving from progesterone, moving downwards. You also draw another line from oestrogen moving downwards. Then just write, thicken the endometrium. So in other words, oestrogen after being released, remember I said O for ovary, another O for ovulation, and then remember, immediately ovulation takes place, that oestrogen is going to be released. After being released, now it thickens the endometrium. Then CPP, corpus luteum, progesterone, pregnancy. Now that progesterone also is going to thicken the endometrium. Can you see now that the endometrium has been thickened? Like I indicated, after 14 days, when the egg is in the fallopian tube, if the egg is not fertilized, the membrane tears off, and I said that's what you call menstruation. But when it's tearing off, you experience what we call the period pains. Now, the other question that we asked during trial examination, they gave you that diagram which deals with menstrual cycle. Number one, somewhere they said, oh, on which day do you think ovulation takes place? It's very easy and simple, day 14. And then, but the other question was, do you think fertilization has taken place? And then the answer was no. But now, remember, when you say fertilization has taken place, or has not taken place, this simply means that somebody is now not pregnant. Now, if you go back, I wanted to check how easy life science is. Remember, you said CPP, then C for corpus luteum, P for progesterone, and P for pregnancy, meaning that progesterone maintains pregnancy. But this progesterone is released by the corpus luteum. If I'm supposed to teach at Texila and many learners know my car, and then immediately they see my car, they know that this car carries Mr. Magia. Obviously, Mr. Magia is available, and then now he's going to teach. You relate the car with Mr. Magia and teaching. If you don't see the car, you conclude that Mr. Magia is not around, and then teaching will not take place. Do you see how easy it is? Now, if there's maybe somebody's asking me a question to say, is teaching going to take place today? Then you are going to say, no. Then they say, why? You say, because I did not see Mr. Majer's car. Mean that Mr. Majer is not around. As simple as that. Now, the car in this case is like the corpus luteum. Then the progesterone is like Mr. Majer now. And then pregnancy is like teaching. Now, if because these are some of the questions that were asked by examiner to say, do you think fertilization has taken place? Immediately they say, no. We say no, meaning that pregnancy has not taken place. Now they say, give two reasons. You talk about progesterone and corpus luteum. Corpus luteum disintegrates or degenerates or disappears. You get one mark. And then because corpus luteum secrete the hormone progesterone, you also say the level of progesterone drops. Just that, then you get 2 marks. Do you see how easy life sciences is? Hence, I told you that from this scenario that I've given you, there are a lot of questions that are going to be based on this. So now, we're going to conclude by summarizing almost everything, but basing an argument on the estrogen or menstrual cycle. Remember, I said menstrual cycle is the 28-day cycle. Then 28 divided by 2. You just write 14 plus 14. And then number 2, you must know that it consists of 2 cycles. Just write it down. It consists of 2 cycles. The first one is called ovarian cycle. Then the second one is called uterine cycle. Remember, I'm dealing with menstrual cycle. It is made up of 2 cycles. The first one is called the ovarian cycle. Then the second one is called uterine cycle. Then the other point that you need to know is simply say menstrual cycle is also known as 28-day cycle. Now, when we define menstrual cycle, we are going to say it refers to the changes that occur in the ovary and the uterus of a female over a period of 28 days. Just that. This is for the purpose of fertilization. Do you see how easy it is? Remember, you are going to talk about the following. Number one, I said when you define menstrual cycle, you are going to say it refers to the changes that occur in the ovary. Remember, I said menstrual cycle is made up of ovarian cycle and the uterine cycle. Changes that occur in the ovary and uterus. Ovary, ovarian cycle, uterus, uterine cycle. Do you see how easy it is? And then, remember, it is for the purpose of fertilization, because if menstruation or the ovulation is not going to take place, obviously, fertilization cannot take place. Now, let us check. Ovarian cycle and ovulation now. Ovarian cycle and ovulation. Ovarian cycle describe what happens inside the ovary. Very simple and straightforward, because you may just say ovarian cycle from the word ovary, meaning that this is about changes, or it describes what happens inside the ovary. And then when the ovum develops inside the Krafft-Ahn follicle, remember I said the ovary, the ovum, like an egg cell, is found in the Krafft-Ahn follicle. It's like the students found inside the classrooms, but this classroom is found inside the ovary, which is the school now. I want you to relate this. We then releases the ovum to become a corpus luteum. This is where I talked about the glass being empty now. Then from there we say we can equate it with the corpus luteum. Now the other point that I want to bring forth here is that with regard to ovarian cycle and ovulation, you simply say ovarian cycle describe what happens in the ovary. Then you tell us a lot of stories there. The other thing you're going to say, the ovum develops inside the Krafft-Ahn follicle. You get a mark for that. Then the Krafft-Ahn follicle releases the egg. You also get a mark for that. And after releasing the egg, I told you that that container now is called the corpus luteum. Then you get another mark for that. Then uterine cycle. Then here you are going to talk about the following. You simply say uterine cycle describes the changes that takes place in the walls of the uterus. The uterus becomes enriched with blood vessels. And at a later stage, normally it tears away, accompanied by blood. Now, the Krafft-Ahn follicle produces a hormone, estrogen. Remember, I gave you that formula, C equals to CPP and OOO. Now, that information is going to be linked to what I've been presenting. The Krafft-Ahn follicle produces a hormone, estrogen, and then estrogen thickens the endometrium for the attachment of the fertilized ovum. And then the follicle releases the ovum by the process of ovulation. That is O is equals to O is equals to O. Krafft-Ahn follicle, remember, is found inside the ovary, is the first O. And then the other O is ovulation, that I just talked about it right now. Another O is estrogen, and I said estrogen thickens the endometrium. Now the remaining part is now called the corpus luteum. Now we are moving towards the right hand side, where we talk about the follicle releases the ovum by the process of ovulation. Then on the right hand side we have got that container is called the corpus luteum. Now the corpus luteum secretes progesterone that maintains pregnancy. And then if the ovum is not fertilized, the corpus luteum degenerates or is destroyed. Then progesterone level drops and menstruation occurs. Then during menstruation, the endometrium lining of the uterus comes off as menstrual cycle. And then this is accompanied by blood. And you must know that normally menstruation or menstrual period lasts for 3 to 7 days. It depends from one person to the next. Some menstruate for 3 days, some menstruate for 4 days, some 5, some 6, and then some 7. But this is just the positive trend that normally happens. But sometimes you realize that there are some people who, or ladies who menstruate for 2 days. You may realize that maybe by chance you realize that somebody's menstruating for 8 days, although it's very rare, but it does not mean that it's not normal. Here we're just generalizing to say normally it takes place between 3 to 7 days. Now, the question that can be asked, now we're done with almost everything, the whole part of reproduction, we also revised everything based on this. Now, the question that can be said now, which you're supposed to acquaint yourself with, this one is from, although I'm not going to discuss this because I've already discussed the whole information, the only thing I'm just going to guide you is about how to approach that particular type of question. If examiner says, this one was taken from 2015 November, paper 1, question paper. It was section C, which is question 4. It says, explain the structural suitability of the stem cell for its function and describe its involvement in the formation of zygote and the development of zygote until implantation. Sterile suitability of the stem, remember you're going to talk about what I presented last time, to say it has got mitochondria, you get a mark to provide energy, and it has got acrosome, you get a mark to this which releases the enzyme that digests the membrane of the egg, and it has got tail, you get a mark for tail, and also another mark for explanation, maybe tail that propels the stem cell forward, and so on and so on. But with regard to its involvement in the formation of zygote, you are going to talk about fertilization. Then this is exactly what I presented when I started this chapter. Then we explain fertilization. And then the development of zygote until implantation is the one that I've been talking about, to say that is costume befu. So we're still going to meet next time, and then the next lesson will be on the 21st of October, next week, Thursday, and then from 9 to 10 in the evening. So for today, just enjoy the rest of the day, and remember, we're starting very soon, and good luck in advance.
This grade 12 lesson was proudly brought to you by the Department of Education. Working together, we can do more, providing quality education.
That was a Capricorn FM podcast. For more podcasts, visit capricornfm.co.za.